Good evening, everybody. The Fan Molyneux from Free Domain. It is time for our Friday night chitty chatty fest. And after a couple of days with no bangers, I guess I have a slight banger of a tweet going on, which I thought would be worth talking about. And I'm thrilled, of course, to take your questions. So the tweet, the X, the Twitter, the whatever it is these days. So I posted a picture. Somebody posted, it was a German engagement ring from the 16th century, was designed to transform into a miniature astronomical map entitled The Whole Universe is in Your Hands. Beautiful, lovely, delightful, wonderful. And I said, this is what men build for women. What is the equivalent from women to men? And here's the thing. Of course, oh, people got offended and hit the roof, and how dare you say that women contribute nothing? I'm just asking a question. I know what my wife brings to the table. She's wonderful. Somebody asked me, what attracted me to my wife, and, her wit, her intelligence, her sexiness, her great sense of humor, moral courage, and integrity, just all kinds of beautiful stuff for me. And she has made our home into a paradise of testosterone-enhancing girly world that works in ways I can't even fathom or comprehend. She's just made the place beautiful, and she's a fantastic homemaker, a wonderful mother, and the best friend, at least that I could hope for. And so I'm just asking in general. Men work very hard. We dig the gold from the earth, dwarf and Oakenshield style. We dig the earth. We risk our lives, we get the gold, we fashion it, we take years to learn how to become a jeweler, and we fashion these things for women. And what is in return? Because, of course, now that sex has been liberated from commitment, women can offer sex, which is really not much of anything when it comes to a sacrifice, like a man who learns how to make an engagement ring like this is putting years and years and years of sacrifice and work into this, as have the man who've created the gold and created the smelters to melt the gold. And having done my old little bit of gold exploration in my teens, I know a little bit whereof I speak. And what is the equivalent from women to men? These days, right? So what do people say? Children, babies, babies, children, children, offspring, lineage, babies, babies, children. And it's like, no, that's tainted. Taint it, laddies. No. Ach, no, lad. Because the man requires a massive amount of skill to create these things and then passes them to the woman. And, ask any man, what value do you get out of the engagement ring that you handed over to your fiance, lo, those many years ago? And he's going to say, nothing, really. Nothing. And, of course, women don't have to study for 5 or 10 years to learn how to craft a baby. All they have to have is let a man jet ski inside them, and they are away to the races. It's an automatic physical function, which is not to say there aren't difficulties to it, but bloating and tender nipples and all kinds of stuff. But that to me is just Tuesday. But women put about as much effort in terms of skill into creating a baby as a man does to create a gallstone. It's an automatic process, and it's really not a massive amount of skill. Now, don't get me wrong. It's not fun. It's not pleasant. There can be really real difficulties with it, but it's not a skill-based thing. And the man transfers his wealth to the woman, who then has the wealth, and there's no more value for the man. It's a one-time transaction. The woman does not transfer the children to the man and then has no further interest in them whatsoever. So I think what women bring to men, traditionally, has been the nurturing of life, the transmissal of values, the education and upbringing of the children, the running of the home, the support of the man, the loyalty, the fidelity, and all of these kinds of good things. Stuff that you have to earn, because the man has to earn the skill and right to make a piece of jewelry like that. Building a baby is not the same. That is an automatic process. One of the things that that it's a bit of an automatic process is building a complex universe-spanning engagement ring is an ability not shared by any non-human animal, but if I remember rightly, non-human animals can get inseminated, get pregnant, grow a baby, and give birth. Happens all the time, billions of times a day, all over the world. So it's not really quite the same thing. And I think, you know, one of the, you've probably seen this famous meme, which is a book there to help women is like, you deserve is like 600 times. A book there to guide men is like, you have to is there forever and ever. Amen. And so reminding women, and I do this because I love women. I live with two wonderful females, love them to death. And I want women to be happy. And the best way to be happy, the best way to be happy in the long run in life, outside of virtue, the best way to be happy is to provide value. To provide value. That is by far the best way. If you want job security, provide value to your employer. If you want someone to be loyal to you in love, make their experience of loving you wonderful. Wonderful. Make them happy. Make them laugh. Be good in bed. Like whatever. Make great food or be really appreciative or share the same values and have the same goals in life. Like the only security is excellence. An excess of value creates an excess of loyalty. An excess of loyalty is precisely what you need to go arm in arm through this veil of roller coaster highs and lows known as existence on the carbon-based life form planet scenario. And women need to think, modern women need to think more about the value that they are providing. What value are you providing? It's not sexual access. It's not simply making a baby. What value are you actually providing? And unfortunately, there's a whole bunch of nefarious negative actors in this world that if you were to ever to say to a woman, they're kind of programmed with these responses. If you were to ever say to a woman, well, what do you bring to the table? I am the table. I am the prize. I like that kind of vanity is exhausting. And it's fundamentally predatory and selfish. Like, I want you guys to listen to what it is that I'm talking about, right? So what is my job? My job is to hopefully think originally, to communicate it in a clear, engaging, occasionally perhaps funny way. It is my job to make philosophy enjoyable, digestible, and what I'm really focusing on, actionable. You can do something about it. It's not just this abstract discipline of mental masturbation. So that's the goal. That's my job. I don't deserve you listening to me. I'm not entitled to you listening to me. You listening to me is not, I am the table. You just got to listen. And if you don't listen, you're a misandrist, right? You need to provide value in this life. The only people who don't need to provide value are babies and toddlers. Everybody else has to provide value in order to get reciprocity. And the best way to radicalize women is to tell them that they are the prize and don't have to provide value. And you can see, man, you've probably seen these charts where men are a little bit more conservative than they were a generation ago, but women have gone like liberal, leftist, hysterical through the roof. Like it's insane. Have 15 points or more upwards in the leftist hysteria. So that's not good. Now, of course, one of the reasons that women can diverge from what men know to be true, like I'm not saying all conservatism is true, but a lot of it is, of course, time-tested and all of that. But the only way that women can be convinced to no longer care about men's opinions is to tell women that they don't need men, to make women entitled and unpleasant so that men don't chase them, to constantly have women or promote women saying, I can't believe these guys are always approaching me in public. It's so gross, right? So that men don't want to talk to women. Then, of course, women feel lonely, isolated, and complain that men don't want to talk to them. And then they go back to another hashtag Me Too thing. So women, by running to the state and having the state backfill their bad decisions, no longer need men. And thus, there is not an anchor to their radicalization. And women have been severely radicalized, like crazy radicalized relative to where they were, you know, even 10 years ago. I mean, it's wild. And that is because they don't need to care what men think because they can run to the government or resources. And it's really, really tragic. It's really tragic. And of course, it doesn't end well. The government is not love. The government is not a husband. The government is not a community. The government is not a family. You're a pet to the government, but it doesn't even give you the comfort of pets. And it is really, really sad. And it is, of course, really impossible for the average man to imagine what it's like to be a woman in the modern, particularly social media landscape. It's wild, man. It's wild. All right. Let's get, because, you know, so much positive feedback. So, I mean, even all the way from school, that you're just wonderful. Women are wonderful. It's a whole psychological phenomenon and so on, right? So it's wild, man. All right. Let's get to the brains of the outfit, a.k.a. you, the gorgeous, gorgeous listeners. We have Dr. Ted. I believe you are, I just want to be your teddy bear. All right, Dr. Ted, what is on your mind, my friend? Don't forget to unmute. I'm all ears.
Hi, Stefan. I agree with you completely. But curious about, like, say, like the T, was it like a T app sort of, was it a doxing or a hacking of sorts? And to see like these massively overweight women. And when these are probably the, like, this is what you're like the women that we're supposed to be chasing weigh 220 pounds. Like, I don't know. Any thoughts on that?
Well, women's overweight has also to do with the fact that they run to the resources. They run to the resources from the state, and then the state uses force to gain those resources from men and then hands it out to the women in return for votes. Now, for those of you who don't know the T story, it's T-E-A, not as in golf. And the T story is that there was an app, and it was number one, though it's not out yet. I don't really know how that works, but there was an app wherein women could say, do you want to date this guy? Here's the red flags. Here's the good. Here's the bad. And I think that it was pretty much doxing people. There were photos and so on, as far as I can tell. And of course, you would need enough information that you'd know who they were talking about in order to figure out whether you could date them or not. And it's just terrible, just a terrible idea, because of course, there's no standard of proof. There's no standard of evidence. There's no cross-examination. It is simply a whisper campaign, which of course, women are ferociously and terrifyingly good at for the most part. And of course, the other thing too, is that for a lot of women, a guy with a bad reputation is exciting. So I think a lot of men would actually end up doing better in the dating market by advertising, you know, how much women trash talked them on this app. But then it turns out that there was a bunch of data stored in an unencrypted format that you could just download, including, I think, the profile photos of the women who were posting. And so the doxers got doxed, and it's all just terrible. And of course, if you could imagine, I don't know, what would you call it? Mafia body count for women or something like that. If men decided to put this together, and I think they did in the past, it would just be banned immediately. So it is really tragic. Women love to be loved and need to be pursued and need to be attractive. And that was understood by all females in all cultures throughout all of history up until about 5 minutes ago. And now, because of a wide variety of psyops, basically around depopulating the groups of people most resistant to tyranny, women have been told that men are bad and men are trash and all of this. And because women have not needed men for a couple of generations, because they've been able to run to the government, which borrows money and sells off their offspring's future for the sake of bribing them in the here and now, women haven't needed men. And so women have become progressively more obnoxious. Like, if you win the lottery, you don't need to be a good employee. You know, you're like, you know that old meme, is it Kermit the Frog, where, you know, after I win the lottery, you know, and your boss tells you something, you're like, watch your mouth, boss, right? I mean, so women have won the lottery as far as getting resources without needing men, as women throughout history have always needed men for resources, and thus have to be attractive to men. And that's how nature designs us to work together. But when women can get the resources without pleasing the men, then they can, you know, the slave owner does not do a 360 performance review. The slaves don't get to criticize the slave owner, and women don't accept any sort of feedback or criticism because they don't need to, any more than you would take being chewed out by your boss or corrected by your boss if you just won the lottery. Well, but what are your thoughts?
Yeah, do you think welfare is the reason for just the degradation of women in general? Like, I mean, like they had to upload their IDs or do a selfie, but you see these IDs being shown, like shared around on X or Twitter, and they're like 220 pounds. Like, is this really what do women bring to the table that can't even bring anything that's physical?
Well, it is a sort of sad fact of nature that is being incredibly resisted at the moment. Not sad. I mean, it's hard to say a fact of nature is sad, but men are visual creatures. We have evolved to evaluate at a very sort of basic and primal level. We have evolved to evaluate genetic fitness at a glance, right? We have to do it that way because we don't have a huge amount of time to choose which woman to approach because other men are circling and approaching. So we have become absolute experts at figuring out genetic fitness. So what we call physical beauty, right? Symmetrical features and so on, and no particular lumps or protrusions or triple chins or anything like that. What we call physical beauty are simply markers for genetic fitness. A good hip to waist ratio and lustrous hair, clear eyes, pink cheeks and so on. These are all signals of genetic fitness. And one of the things that men need to know is how smart the women are, right? We don't all come. It'd be kind of cool if we did, right? But it would be kind of cool if we all came with the IQ tattooed on our forehead so we'd know who to interact with, but we don't. So we have to find some other kind of proxy. And one of the first proxies, of course, for intelligence in a woman is whether she's obese or not. And again, there's tons of exceptions and everyone's a human, equal under the law, blah, blah, blah. But in general, intelligence and BMI are inversely correlated. The higher the intelligence, the lower the BMI and vice versa. So unfortunately, there are a lot of women who are out there mimicking being less intelligent than they actually are by letting themselves gain weight. And, you know, it's funny. I remember many, many years ago, this is before Obamacare. This is, gosh, I was still doing my master's. So this would be like 30 years ago. I remember reading a blog from a guy in America. And it was really fascinating to me. Healthcare has been a real interest of mine for many, many decades. And he was not exercising. He was overweight. And he went for his annual physical. His annual physical was sent to his insurance company. And his insurance company said, man, you got to fix these numbers, man. You got to fix your blood work. You got to lose weight. You got to start exercising. Like, it's terrible. I mean, you don't have to, but if you don't, then we're going to increase your premium significantly, right? So that was sort of his early warning signal. So what did he do? Well, he chronicled his own whole journey, right? He started eating better. He exercised. He lost a good deal of weight. He gained muscle. And of course, he was much happier as a result. But that it took someone, it took a financial cost and someone caring enough to tell him that it was going to cost him money. Now, of course, if people are overweight, they don't exercise and so on, assuming no particular physical limitations, the taxpayers and the government end up paying more, but the government doesn't care. And the insurance company does care because if they insure people and they end up spending more on their healthcare than they get in their insurance premiums, and they know this math, you know, really, really intimately, then the insurance company is probably going to go out of business. Whereas the government doesn't ever perceive it that way. So the government doesn't care enough for people to say you have to lose weight or you're going to be facing some sort of fine or negative thing, which is basically what the insurance company was saying. And so women don't have the feedback of not getting resources from men if they are overweight. And it's actually very cruel because then the women gain weight. They also, you know, you can't discriminate for prior existing conditions, which is a whole other thing in the American healthcare system, which is way more than 50% government run at the moment. It's not really private at all. Then the insurance company is not allowed to discriminate, the government doesn't get a care, and you can get resources without pleasing men. So you are missing that feedback loop. You know, that the negative pain pressure point that you need to make better decisions. You know, like the guy who he thinks he's having a heart attack, it turns out it's just indigestion or something, but it's enough of a scare for him to change his life and start working for the better. So we're withholding negative feedback from people. And that is just making their lives infinitely worse over time.
Do you have the statistics on obesity and among just American statistics among males and females. And because, like, for example, like, I think like about half of American men are overweight. But when I go to the airport, like, I see a lot of guys in the past 20 years, like, they're lifting weights. They're actually trying to change their life. They're trying to make effective change. And you don't see that anywhere in America with women. Like, they're just like, how fat can I get?
Well, remember, in America, as is in the case with most places, if you're not breaking data down by ethnicity, you're kind of doing a disservice, right? And Kevin Salmon used to talk about this all the time when he would sort of criticize women in the Black community for being heavier than the average Black man. And that was a big issue. So if you look at, say, the East Asian community, right, sort of the China, Japan, Korea, and so on, their BMIs are not particularly high. And then the white community is worse than that. Hispanic is worse than that. Black is worse than that. So you don't want to put everything together in one big solid sort of blob, but you want to sort of break these things down by ethnicity because the rates vary quite a bit among various ethnicities within, well, I mean, around the world as a whole. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know what the answer is going to be other than eventually the government's going to run out of money and the system's going to have to recalibrate and women are going to realize that they need men. And until women realize that they need men, then, you know, it's the Garden of Eden, right? We had the Garden of Eden in the 19th century. I just did a show on this today about the boomers. We had the Garden of Eden in the 19th century in many ways, in terms of progress and going in the right direction and a century of peace in Western Europe. And then the vanity came along, which is women are particularly susceptible as a whole to flattery. Men have their own weaknesses around status and so on, but women are particularly susceptible to flattery. And they should be getting their flattery from men, but instead they're getting their flattery from the media and politicians, which are working against women's long-term happiness. But it's like a drug. Is there anything else you wanted to mention?
No, that's it. I really appreciate you, Stefan. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Dr. Ted. Very nice to chat with you. I appreciate that. And don't forget freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. Lady Ali. Oh, that's a cool font, man. I don't even know how you do that on X. Very squiggly, very writing on the surface of a lake. What is on your mind, my friend? How can I help you today?
Can you hear me?
You're going to have to, I don't want to turn up the volume here, but you're kind of quiet in my ear.
Oh, hold on. I'm on the wrong microphone. Give me a second.
No problem.
There, is that better?
Not particularly, but I can hear you. Why don't you go ahead?
Well, as on the subject of women adding value, we're kind of not taught to create value in ourselves. We have a whole generation of people my age, I'm 37, all the women in my generation, we're not taught that.
Sorry, did you just say to create value in yourselves?
Yes.
What do you mean by that?
So what I mean is the kind of thing that our grandmothers did. Mm. When, sure, we had, they had babies, but they also raised them, but they also made a peaceful home that was a constant in a man's life. So, and even when things got hard, they didn't have the ability so much as they do now to just kind of take off. And that I take my own grandparents, I take a lot of this from their situation because they were kind of forced to get married early because she got pregnant at 15 and he was 18 and it was 1958. And they had really difficult first 10 years and six kids before, like, age 22.
They had six kids before age 22?
If I'm doing the math right, I think so. But they, oh no, five kids, because one kid came 8 years later. But they had a lot of kids. And the thing was, my grandpa worked hard and was very much a family man and That's kind of all he did. But the difference is they both had parents and grandparents that taught them how to do that. And even my grandma was a little bit more free-spirited for the time. So they had harder years. And plus, she was only 15. So it meant like she couldn't, you know, go have that friend's experience that her friends could have because she was home with her toddlers. But she had family to help. She had their parents, though they weren't rich by any means, they were able to help them buy their own first starter house. And they gave my grandpa a job. And there was much, and it was a smaller town, but there was a tighter sense of community. And, you know, my grandma was being taught by four women how to cook, how to clean, how to take care of babies. And then my parents' generation didn't learn any of that and then didn't pass it on to us because I guess they thought the public school system would do that. And there are some classes sometimes in public school, but they don't care, you know? So a lot of women in my generation just weren't taught that. We weren't raised in tight-knit communities. So in a way, to a certain point, it wasn't our fault. But after a certain point, you have to turn your brain on and think, like, what if the problem is me? And a lot of women find that difficult for a lot of reasons. But
simps. Sorry, go on.
Well, yeah, simps. And I'm super anti-simp. That really bothers
me.
Oh,
honey, there's nothing you need to change. You're perfect the way you are. Send me nudes. Anyway, go on.
Well, that's where what you were saying earlier comes into play, where you said women are very susceptible to flattery. That's true. And I've experienced that. And even if you're a four, you know, you're still, you're even more, maybe more susceptible to that. Especially,
well, you get it from the simps, and you also get it from other women who want to pump up your vanity so you don't improve yourself and compete with them.
Well, for example, for me, I grew up in Colorado in a very like hippie kind of yuppie culture. And
you only had to say Colorado. I could fill in the rest myself, but go on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, all of my friends' parents were actual hippies who had techie jobs now. And so they were all like Nepo babies. But I was like their little poor pet because I grew up not like that. And, you know, I started listening to you years and years ago now because of your narcissistic mother stuff.
I'm glad you finished that sentence. I started listening to you, Steph, because of your narcissistic, and I'm like, where does that go? Where does that go? No, oh, mother. Okay, no. good. Okay,
yeah, I'm with you. Because that's my mom, 100%.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. Also, I really am.
Yeah, but also plus methamphetamine. So, oh.
Yeah, we had a caller in the last show, not to outdo bad mothers, but yeah, he had to shoot at the age of 14 a hitman that his mother hired to kill him. So you got meth. I didn't have meth. So I'm really sorry for all of that.
Well, my point was that with all of these people who were raised rich and stuff, then they romanticized being poor for some reason. And so it was like, oh, you're so beautiful and so amazing for coming up out of the gutter. Like, what's it like to not be able to eat? And it's like, well, it sucks. Like, what do you want from me? But I was very susceptible to the, oh, you're so amazing thing.
Mm.
The thing that women have to realize is that all those people telling you, oh, you're so amazing, those people might even be serious. Like, they might even believe what they're telling you. But it doesn't matter because they don't really care. And you should realize that before it's too late.
And what makes you say, and I'm not disagreeing with you, but what is it that you mean when you say they don't care?
Because people who really care about you would tell you hard truths instead of constantly, oh, you're so amazing. Oh, that's so wonderful. Oh, you're so talented. Like, I'm very mistrustful of flatterers now because of that. because there was a moment where it was, I'm going to not be around for a while. Will you guys please hang out with me for 45 minutes? You know, because I'm going to have to be gone for a year doing something very important. I was going to be raising my child. And I said, you know, since I'm pregnant, could you guys like smoke pot in 45 minutes as opposed to now? And they said, no, we'd rather get high inside, and just left me on the porch. And I said, wow, none of you were my actual friends. Mm-hmm. All of the years of all this stuff was a total lie. I'm better off knowing this now. And it would have, and now I have been able to choose better friends and teach my kid how to choose better friends, but also teach her that truth, even when it's hard, usually as long as it's not said in kind of a dickish way, is,
I'm working on it.
It's always better. Well, some people need it that way, but the hard truth is always going to be more loving than the weird love bombing, I guess. But
yeah, I mean, I wish society would figure out what its relationship to the truth was. Because, you know, when I was growing up, I was, tell the truth. Always got to tell the truth. Tell the truth. Be honest. And then when I became an adult and got a fairly significant platform, I told the truth and was honest and got canceled to hell and gone. So it's like, can y'all figure out whether you want the truth or not? It would be really helpful to get some clear guidance on this. So, well, sorry, go ahead.
You have to just realize, like, some people aren't going to like the truth, and maybe those are the people you don't want to be around.
Yeah, generally I found that if the truth serves those in power, then the truth is virtuous. If the truth doesn't serve those in power, it's bad. It's all just sort of power-based metrics. Okay, so let me ask you this. Congratulations on your child, of course. So
that was 14 years ago now. So
all right, time travel. Congratulations, we're back. Now, as a woman online, what is your experience of men as a whole?
Well, I have a tiny YouTube channel, and I write and edit books. And because of that, I have it for about 7 years now. Because of that, what I have seen, and I work in comics, so there's a lot of male viewers.
Male what?
Viewers.
Can you spell that? I don't know what that word is.
V-I-E-W-E-R-S.
Viewers, my apologies. Okay, I know that word. Okay, got it.
There's a lot of men, and they tend to be simps, which I hate.
So tell me how you, like, how do you know? I'm not disagreeing with you, but what are the signs? Help us understand, classify, and identify the common male simp.
Well, the simp is someone who will do anything for you despite anything you do.
Mm. It's just this push economy of like, I'd love to help you move. You'll go skiing, I'll drop you off. Like just this offer of constant resources with no expectation or desire for reciprocity.
And they tend to flatter a lot. But if you're a woman and you want to be, to feed into those simps, then your time online is really easy. It's really easy to be a woman online if you give in to the simps. It's so much harder to, and I'm not saying that to be like, oh, poor me, but, and it could, cause I'm not doing what I do for money. I'm not doing it for attention. Like,
wait, you don't do what you do. You mean online? You mean, but you have a job that pays. You're just talking about like your activities online.
Yeah. Well, I'm a stay at home, married homeschool mom. So,
okay. Like, got it. So you're online for a cause or for connection, but not for money. Okay.
Yeah, and the stuff I do for money online is like supplemental fun time income. So I guess I'm lucky in that, maybe. But if you are a woman who wants to show virtue online, who doesn't want to play into the simpage, it's a million times harder than it is to just play into The Sims, because all these little thoughts, women.
Sorry, thought women?
Yeah, THOT. It means that whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. I know the acronym. I've been accused of thought patrol myself, and I just wanted to make sure I understood it. Okay, so go ahead. Sorry.
All of those women tend to gather in flocks, and they'll attack you if you so much as say, like I got a huge amount of hate from a small group of people who have a lot of simp followers because I said, oh, this person only lets women on who if they'll show their tits. Like this person only lets women on if they'll do jumping jacks on stream, and they'll call it like, oh, we're doing it for physical purposes, you know, like we're working out. And it's like, no one believes that. And I'm not going to debase myself and embarrass my family, embarrass my legacy just for some views. Like,
no, and listen, I don't want to debase the audience or myself by asking for the name of this channel. You can just DM that to me after the show, but sorry, go on.
Okay. Well, these women get really mad when you say that, and then their simps will fight on behalf of them.
Mm.
And that gets... It's not scary because it's all online, but it gets really stupid, and they'll get violent. It's kind of shocking, but it's...
Well, sorry, on the other side of flattery is almost always aggression, right? So flattery is the carrot, and if you don't go for the carrot, they'll just give you the stick, right? Like, oh, you're doing your civic duty by getting the vax. You're a good person. You care about your community. If you don't get the vax, you can't travel. You can't have a... Like, it's always, if you don't fall for the flattery, you know, out comes the brass knuckles.
Yeah, if you're not with us, then you're against us, and it's time to attack you. And mm-hmm. and they'll make up crazy stories. And
really? Never heard of that, but go on.
Well, this one other creator decided to tell everyone after I said people only liked her because she bounces around and shows rubies online. Like, that's the only reason why.
Now, sorry, when you say that, you don't mean like actual out, because that's banned in a lot of places outside of OnlyFans. Do you mean just like cleavage and jello?
This one woman in particular, she absolutely does. And she used to do it. She used to sell pictures of herself and stuff online and her underwear and stuff. And it's documented and it's all there.
Mm.
But then, you know, but I'm the bad guy. The thing that happened was I said hello to her at a convention where she was selling her books, because I figured...
I wasn't sure that books was going to end with a K, but go on.
No, it's comics now. But I figured, oh, you know, we both do comics. Like, this is a professional courtesy. I said hi. It lasted maybe 60 seconds. She took that and told everyone that I spilled water on her books. And so all her simps got mad at me. And then one of the people that is much more popular than both of us started inflating the story. And now I apparently walked over with a bottle of water and I spilled the entire thing on a stack of books and pointed and laughed. And I'm like, what world do people believe this? Because there's so many holes in the story. Because it's like, oh, so at a convention, no one kicks you out when you do that. You know, aside from that, I have an affiliation with Liquid Death, and I only drink canned water because plastic water freaks me out. Like, you guys really think that I did that? I had no problem with her at the time. You know, it's just stacked on, but it doesn't matter because I don't have simps. What I built is actual people who want to read my books and communicate, but it's smaller because of that. But my idea was longevity and self-respect. You know, building something that my kid could look at and say, like, my mom is good. But yeah, that's my general perspective on men. And the ones, it's getting better now, because the ones who aren't simps are very...
Sorry, it's not the ones, it's the one, but go on. I'm just kidding, go on.
There are the ones who aren't simps.
Not me, but go on.
Those ones are very, very they're much more respectful of women in general than the Sims, which is funny. And then there's a whole bunch more men who literally don't care about women online at all and won't pay attention to you whatsoever just based on the fact that you're a woman. So you're totally disregarded. And I'm not a feminist. I'm pretty misogynistic myself. But a modern culture has created a bunch of men who don't care about women at all and a bunch of women who have a weird, creepy daddy fascination with women and just throw money at them constantly.
Oh, a bunch of men who do that, right?
Yeah. And yeah, then, yeah. And then a smaller amount of normal men who just want women that will bring them peace.
Right, right. No, it is something that men stagger from decade to decade with maybe one or two compliments that aren't from their mom. You know, whereas women, you know, if you're online
every day,
you can get, I mean, if you're even remotely prominent and an attractive woman, you can get thousands of compliments a day.
You don't even have to be attractive because now you use filters.
Oh, yes, that's right.
And it's so crazy that I can see filters immediately, but it's like men don't see them at all. Right. It's shocking. I'm like, they don't have, there's some sort of thing in some people's minds where they can't see AI right away and they can't see filters right away.
Well, it's because they've spent all their time looking at video game girls and they can't tell an actual human female for real.
Like her eyelashes are floating.
Right. Like levitating spiders near the eyeballs. Yeah.
Yeah. But maybe it's that they want to believe that women are more attractive than they actually are. I'm not sure, but that's just a thing that we have to deal with as people, which is why I just tell people, don't be on apps. Just go meet people in real life, because you can't use a filter in real life, and you can tell when a woman is wearing makeup in real life and how much, because there's degrees. For sure.
Yeah, but it would be like if I had a voice that was kind of like this, but I used some filter, and then I would never want to meet people online. Hey, I'm Stefan Molyneux from Free Domain. How you do? Be like, whoa, filter much, bro? I think you do. Yeah, it must be wild. I mean, I remember when I was in high school, I there was a girl after a cast party. We were in our town. There was a girl I took home because she was very drunk. And she was so drunk, she draped all over me. It's like, yeah, Steph, you're gorgeous, but you flirt with everyone. And I was like, wait, what? Okay, forget the flirting thing. That's kind of true. And that was the only time in high school or sort of in my youth that I was ever called attractive. And, you know, later I got scouted for modeling. So it was a little bit more of that, but nothing too serious, of course. But, you know, men just, you know, remember, yes, I remember that time, you know, 12 years ago when that woman said I had a nice smile. And that's what we live on. We live on these tiny, tiny scraps of water in this endless desert that women are drowning in. And I can't imagine, I literally can't imagine what it would be like to receive that level of adulation just for breathing and having baby feeders. Like, it's wild.
That is crazy because every single man that I have spoken to in basically my life now has said, I can count on my hands how many times I've received a compliment, even from family.
Right.
Which is insane. It's like, oh yeah, I do remember 20 years ago when a girl said that my hair looked nice and it made my week, you know? And then it's like, I can count on both hands how many times I got complimented in the store today. And you know, it's like, I wasn't even wearing makeup and my hair was up. Like, it doesn't matter. And even if it wasn't real, you know, because I don't think when women compliment each other, it's real most of the time.
Yeah, men trade fake insults. Women trade fake compliments, right? And I talk about this with my wife and daughter. We have sort of a running gag about their pretty privilege. You know, would you like a little extra donut with your coffee? I'm like, oh, pretty privilege. You know, look at the size of my ice cream and my wife's ice cream. Pretty privilege. And so it is, it's just, it's beautiful. There's nothing wrong with it. Although it wouldn't be the end of the world if men got a few more compliments. But I think because men are kind of the dray horses and in some sense the tax serfs of the modern society, you don't want to give them any particular praise because then they might not want to be subjugated and exploited in that kind of way.
Well, there's a lot of, I think a lot of men don't believe it now when they get a compliment. You know, they kind of
push away. Where's my wallet? Where's my watch? Somebody just complimented me.
Yeah, but also on that same note, I've never spoken to a man who has, or let me rephrase. So the same way that every man I know has received very few compliments, every man I know has stories of women physically attacking them in relationships in absolutely horrific and shocking ways.
Yep.
And the problem with men being physically attacked in relationships, I'm sure you know this, you've talked about it, but they're not allowed legally, societally, to do anything about it.
And the women know that, right?
Yeah, well, and every man who I've talked to said that they have a moment, with the exception of my husband, that they have a moment where they felt guilty for being physically attacked by the woman that they were with.
Right.
And that is insane to me. And this is going to be shocking to people, but in that way, I think abuse is much worse on men than it is on women, because they have no recourse. A lot of times they're not believed. Like my husband, his ex from years and years ago now, she threw scissors at him and they got stuck in his back when she threw them. And he had to basically, he couldn't reach them. So he had to basically suffer the indignity of asking her to pull the scissors out of his back.
Hopefully she'll pull, not push. Yeah, I had a roommate once whose girlfriend attacked him with a bread knife.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's wild. I mean, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I've had experiences too, but I feel like I got over them much quicker than any guy I've ever spoken to, because all the guys were like, now I avoid brunettes.
I don't think that's the cause and effect, brother.
Well, it's like, because now every time I see a brunette, I just have this image of this girl hitting me, you know? Or I have a friend who was in such an abusive relationship for almost 2 years that he wasn't allowed to leave his house. She threw his phone away and hit his laptop, and he was haggard. Like, it was so depressing, and no one could get a hold of him. And she was totally psychotic, and it was very difficult to pull him out of that, and he's still... he's not the same man in any way.
No, and there's very little support. Of course, I had the great Erin Pitsey on my show, and she tried opening up a men's shelter for victims of abuse, and the feminists threatened and crazy stuff and all of that. And yeah, men get almost no support from men or from women. The man is generally perceived to be at fault. What did you do to provoke her? Which, again, would never go the other way. And, you know, all power corrupts. And the fact that women are generally not held to account for false accusations, the fact that women are generally not held to account for physical violence, the fact that in many jurisdictions, you can't even classify force to penetrate as the rape of a male, which is shockingly common. It is a very distorted view that people live in, and our inability to process women's capacity for evil is literally destroying our civilization. But sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying, unless they're a child.
Unless they're what?
A child.
Hmm. Right.
I think boys still have more help in that area than men do.
Hmm.
I think we as a society tend to protect boys now. For a little while, it wasn't so much.
Yeah. I mean, listen. You have a son. I have a daughter, and they're not dissimilar in age. Sorry.
I have a daughter.
Oh, you have a daughter. Oh, sorry. I thought it was a son. I don't think that the boys are doing too well in society at the moment. And I think in schools and in the media and so on, it is.
Oh, in schools, it's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, that's why you homeschool, I guess, to some degree, right?
Oh, yeah. One of the reasons. But on a similar note from what you started with about the ring, I wanted to say, while it is true that historically men do greater things for women than men do.
Than women do for men, you mean?
Than women do for men. There's only one of those rings. So I agree with you, but not all men are capable of or have the time to or think about doing something that cool and intricate and...
Okay, and of course, I'm not saying that every man is a master jeweler, but, you know, men turn over 90% of their productivity to their wives and kids over the course of their life, right? So my question is always like, okay, but what are women doing in return? And listen, I'm not saying that women can't, but I think for a lot of women, it doesn't cross their mind. And maybe it's a psyop of this, I am the table, I don't bring anything to the table, but I just, you know, I want women to be happy, I want them to be treasured, I want them to be in love. And in order to be treasured and happy and in love, the value you provide to your partner has to be incontrovertible. It has to be so obvious that you're like falling on your knees every day to thank them for what it is that they're doing. And both parties should be doing that. And I just, if women can't appreciate what is being provided to them and they can't be grateful and they can't be happy with the sacrifices men made, pair bonding doesn't really happen. And then you just flitting around till age takes you out of the game.
Yeah, it requires women to be self-reflective. which requires pushing away the veil of narcissism that we're kind of gifted.
And it's inflicted, yeah.
Yeah, that's the better way to put it, because it's a tragedy, really. We should be harsher on women in that way.
Well, I think just more blunt and saying that being in possession of a vagina does not mean that you are somehow immune from the need to provide value in a relationship.
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, I was just thinking this afternoon, I was going to do a show on it, but I thought, I can't imagine as a man, you know, my inbox filling up with men who want to fly me to Barbados for a weekend and who want to take me to Vegas and who, like, just this endless lottery of, like, women who want to give me resources just for the possibility of having sex with me. And it's just like, that would distort anybody's sense of reality. And then you go to the media and the women are all brilliant and wonderful and kick ass and take on five guys and are geniuses. And it's just like, it's just absolutely relentless. And then you turn on pop songs and she's the victim and the guy's bad and she didn't do anything wrong and he's just a jerk, and it's just like, it's relentless. And I don't blame women for this in general, because I'm not sure I'd survive. I can say, well, look, I don't fall for propaganda. It's like, yeah, who's trying to propagandize my wrinkly old ass, right? I mean, so it is a whole different world that women live in terms of that sort of pressure. Sorry, go ahead.
We're really susceptible to lyrical content, much more than men. And in my years homeschooling, seeing boys and girls in homeschool environments, the music that girls listen to completely changes their perception of life in every way. And I can look back on my high school years and I'm like, if I hadn't have been allowed to listen to some of the stuff I've listened to, then I don't think that I would have had the same 20s that I did have, because it was all you know, Evanescence and Linkin Park and I'm So Tortured and
let the bodies hit the floor. Yeah.
And that's why, you know, I called my grandparents and I said, I am so sorry, everything that you said and your parents said is 100% true, down to Elvis's gyrating hips.
Right.
And people can laugh and that's fine, but I don't think societally it's deniable. I have seen a lot of people in my generation and the one right below me making a lot of positive changes in a gender/sexual segregation kind of manner, where it's like, well, boys are this and girls are this, and we just have to teach them how to be that, you know, yin yang thing together. And it's not easy because you have to, you know, it's like in the never ending story when Atreyu has to go and look in the mirror and he has to face his true self. And he says, some men run away screaming. It's the same for women, but like, we'll cry, you know, and then someone will come over and hug us and say, oh, you don't have to change.
Or the women avoid the true self until they're 45 and it's and a little too late for whatever it is that they want to do. And I remember very clearly when I was in my teens, detoxing from Pink Floyd with John Anderson, because it's a much more positive message. All right, listen, we've got a bunch of people who want to chat. Obviously, you're welcome back at any time. It was a real delight to chat with you. And
can I say one more quick thing?
Yeah, go for it.
I just wanted to thank you for helping me tell my family that I didn't want to do Santa. Because it's because of you that I didn't do Santa, and I think it has created a lot of positives for my kids.
Yeah, I mean, I dressed up as Santa for kids from time to time, but I'd always tell them it's a fun story. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
you don't play to them How to Train Your Dragon and say that's real, that's a historical documentary. You say that's a fun story, and kids enjoy that, and I'm glad that worked out for you. All right. Thanks, Emil. You're welcome back anytime. What a real pleasure to chat with you, and thank you. Oh, I can't praise you. Sorry, you're a female. I'm simping. God help me. All right. Yvonne. I know how to pronounce that because I've seen the name before. Yvonne. Ivanka. What's on your mind? Oh, I got to check my volume here because last lady was quiet. Going once, going twice. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. So I just came in. I don't know when this started, but I came in when you stated that you started some process of, let me strike that. You stated that when you were growing up, people always told you, tell the truth. And then when you got to a point where you were telling the truth, and then you said some kind of like cracker joke in reference to people not wanting to hear the truth, correct?
Yeah, I got canceled and kicked off just about every major platform known to man, God, and the devil. So, and that was for things that were scientifically true and factual and, you know, real suspicions about the origin of COVID in the lab. And of course, wanting to push back against the George Floyd riots by bringing the truth about George Floyd to the masses. So, they everybody told me growing up, you know, it's really, you got to tell the truth, don't lie. And then you get any kind of platform, you tell the truth and it's like, oh, you told the truth? You're toast, man.
Okay, so I just wanted to start right there because that's where I stepped in on the conversation. So I heard a few things that you guys were discussing. I don't know what the question was, but back to the truth thing, I did hear you guys saying something in reference to most people don't want to hear the truth. Most people don't want to hear the hard, cold truth. Now, me as an individual, I'm someone who says the hard truth. I don't give a shit who I offend, okay? If you don't like what I said, well, then you can just close your ears. So this is what I'm going to say. I heard you guys both going back and forth in reference to women and men, and women are this, and men are this, and women are this, and men are this. This is my truth, okay? I was raised by an alcoholic father that used to beat my mother, okay? So I have a whole different perspective. When I got into a relationship, my ex used to beat me. So the cycle continued, right? So when I hear people talk about men this and women this, then women think women have an automatic privilege and you know, men are abusers and et cetera. I've gotten a lot of therapy, but I guess my main point in saying this is it's not one-sided. This is just my beef with the world and people believing that we have this thing where we'll go, yeah, it's them, it's the women. No, it's the men. No, it's both. It's both. It's not one sided. Women, okay, yeah, I'll accept the fact that yeah, we grow up having this privilege, this thing you call pretty privilege. You know what? I don't think I'm an ugly duckling. You know, I'm not horribly looking. My sisters actually and my nieces were models. So I personally, I never get compliments. I never get told, oh, your hair looks nice. Oh, you're so pretty. I never get that. So when you guys were discussing, you know, women are constantly getting complimented and gifted and this, that, and the other, you know, that's not my personal experience. I never get complimented. I never get for anything from family to friends to just strangers in the street. So I don't know that world. But again, I have a sister who was a model and I saw her get that. Gifts, dates, trips, everything you guys just said. So yes, that's true. But I'm going to take it a step back. I grew up, was raised with a mother who prayed and was in church, who believed in God. Now, we all had the choice to choose. We want to go down this way, want to go down this way. I chose the church side. So my nose was in the Bible while my sister was in the club partying. So I'm going to land it right here. I believe that really what it comes down to, now my ex, he used to beat the shit out of me. We used to beat the shit out of each other, okay? We both were raised in very unstable homes, and so we beat the shit out of each other. But I guess my main point in saying this is that it comes down to that individual person and the choices that they decide and how they want to treat another individual, be it male or female. And I'll leave it at that, okay? Take care, guys.
Are you leaving?
No, I just want to leave it there. It's not just one-sided. It just frustrates me when you guys got this like viewpoint that it's one-sided. It's not. It takes two to tango.
But hang on. When on earth did I ever say it's one-sided? So let me sort of tell you You had a good old time to talk. Let me talk now.
Well, you asked me a question, so I was trying to answer.
Okay, so sorry. I certainly never said that it was one-sided. And I don't remember the woman saying it was one-sided either.
I heard a lot of those bad women are always getting away with shit. This is what I heard. Okay,
it doesn't matter what you heard. What matters what was said, because you can't just make up things and then that's a straw man, right?
This is the message that I received.
Okay, but that's not fair. You have to listen to what people say and deal with what they say, right? So we were talking about how men can be victimized as well, and this is would you say that female victims of domestic abuse generally get more sympathy and resources than male victims of domestic abuse?
No.
No. Well, where are the men's shelters in your town?
Oh,
Where's the men's domestic abuse awareness month?
Let me give you an example.
I don't need an example. I'm not looking for your personal anecdotes. Where are the male shelters for victims of domestic abuse who are men?
In my neighborhood.
How many of them are there compared to women?
I wouldn't know the stats on that, but I actually used to work at a few.
Okay, so in your particular neighborhood, there are as many shelters for men as there are for women?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Do you think that's true in general?
I don't know.
But you've worked in the field, right?
Yes.
Okay, do you know that, I don't know if it's even changed, but certainly up until recently, there was no collection of data on men being raped by women. It was considered impossible.
I wouldn't know anything about that subject.
Okay, so do you think that in general, women get more sympathy for their suffering in society, or men get more sympathy for their suffering, or is it about the same? Are you still on?
It's females that pretty much get more sympathy, but not in my case.
Well, okay. I know, not in your case. And listen, what you went through as a child, I have nothing but absolute.
This is not about my childhood. This is about my personal experience with domestic violence and the court systems and how they treated many women in my community. which was lopsided, meaning I know a lot of people think, oh, the women are always treated nicely and the men always get the shit end of the stick. Well, I'm here to tell you that's not true.
Well, I don't think that that's ever been asserted, at least not on this show.
Well, I mean, I think in general, most people think that women who go to court, divorce, child custody, et cetera,
oh, the woman that's true. Always gets, yeah, no, that's absolutely, hang on. So 90% of custody battles go to the female.
Right. Well, not in my case.
Okay, and but not we're not talking about you in particular. Case. Because well, you can't
Let me finish, sir. Not in my case and a lot of women that I know. Because I used to work in that realm, if you can understand what I'm stating.
Okay, so let me tell you what bothers me about this. And listen, what happened to you as a kid? What happened to you as a wife?
This isn't about me personally.
I need to talk. Okay,
you're
either
going to
let me talk or I'm going to dump you from the call. Okay,
sir, this is the last. Okay, I am trying to respond.
No. That's just incredibly rude. I mean, I gave her like six or seven chances. So what bothers me about that kind of stuff, and of course, you know, massive sympathy for Yvonne and what she suffered as a child and what she suffered as a wife. Absolutely appalling, crippling, awful, evil violations of the non-aggression principle. Absolutely unacceptable. But here's the thing. It is a constant thing in society, a constant pattern in society that men say, here's how we suffer a little bit, and in come the women. Oh, but I suffered. Oh, but all my friends. And it's like, can men just have a chance to say that we suffer sometimes? Is that at all possible? Or is it just like, but the women? And no, of course, women get vastly more support for their issues. Men get less. Again, there's lots of individual exceptions, but it's a general trend that holds true. And it's really tough. It's really tough for people to listen to men. And this was pretty mild stuff, right? This was just like, well, men don't really get that many compliments and boys are treated badly in school. This was pretty mild stuff. And she was talking about the men that she knew who had experienced physical abuse in relationships. And I mentioned someone that I knew when I was younger who'd experienced physical danger in relationships. I know men who've had knives pulled on them. I know men who've had guns pulled on them. Just one. And can we talk about that without women coming in and saying, but my husband beat me? And it's like, it's almost like a summoning ritual, so to speak. And it's really tough for people. All right, Sethy Seth, I am all ears, my friend. What is on your mind? I know there's a little bit of a delay here, but... Hello, hello, hello. All right. Looks like you need to unmute if you're going to talk. I guess everybody kind of knows that, but just want to remind you. All right. We are not able to do that. Legionnaire Anon. If you want to unmute, I'm all ears. Legionnaire Anon. I don't think I muted everyone. Did I mute everyone? Nah, not even a little bit. Not even a little bit. All right. Hello, hello. Going once, going twice. We have lost the plot. Dorbins, I think we've chatted before. If you want to unmute, I'm all ears.
Hello, Steph.
Hello.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Perfect. Sorry, I jumped into the call fairly late, so I'm not sure if there's like a specific topic you want to focus on.
Whatever's on your mind, brother, I'm easy peasy.
Awesome, cool. So I'm kind of in a dilemma at the moment where I'm trying to, understand, what's the word am I looking for here? So I'm going to try and be vague, but a Chinese national has purchased a specific property in my area, and I'm trying to motivate the people in my town to do something about it. And for some reason, I'm preparing everything, making a website, trying to get people motivated about it because I only learned about it a few days ago.
And what just to be clear, what is it? You're not talking about a torches and pitchfork mob. What is it that you would like people to do ideally?
Well, to hold their mayor and the board of committee responsible for not making the town aware that this Chinese national was buying this particular area that's in a very sensitive spot, because they're going to have control over part of the water. And of course, there's like defense contractors around as well. So it's quite scary.
Okay. And what is the ways in which I could help you, perhaps?
I guess for me, I'm trying to stay motivated in the face of other people's indifference.
Mm.
Because I faced this during COVID, because I lived in a fairly big city when COVID happened. And I tried to convince quite a few people that I know to leave the city with me. And let's just say it was not the most successful of things. And I just fear that I'm probably falling into the same pattern where I might be trying too hard.
What do you mean by trying too hard?
Well, as in, I just feel I've just learned about this for the past few days, but most of the people that I've talked to so far don't seem to grasp the potential danger. And it feels like I'm the crazy one for not seeing the potential danger of this.
Right.
And I'm just trying to remain positive and push forward and trying to motivate people who will actually do something about it, you know? Because not every person I'm going to come across is going to care about this matter in particular, but I want to be able to stay motivated. And I guess I'm trying not to fall into feeling how I felt during COVID, if that makes sense.
Right. Okay. So give me your pitch. We used to say in the business world or the investment world, your elevator pitch, right? So you get into an elevator with someone who could invest in your company. So give me the pitch that you want to get me involved in your cause, as if we were in the elevator and you have 60 seconds. What do you got?
Okay. So I would say something to the effect of, look, in China, they have issues currently at the moment with their own water supply. And I can understand that it might be a touchy subject to try and focus on a foreign national company coming into your town and taking over things. And maybe that might create problems when you're talking to people who are either from China or things like that. But if the evidence I'm providing you here, in terms of, their water pollution, their overfishing, just every environmental thing that they're involved in, it always ends in catastrophe. And I just think that we need to be aware of this and hold our elected officials responsible for the things that they clearly are not aware of or doing anything about. And I just think that our water supply obviously should be something that we're very concerned about, given that we have a history of pushing people out of our city who have caused pollutions before in the past. So I think that, obviously do your own research, but I think it's a very serious problem that we should be talking about more and really getting everyone motivated about.
And how that speech has not been doing what you wanted to do, right?
Well, it's still fairly early on.
Sorry, you're calling me because it's not working, right?
Well, not necessarily. The thing is that there are some people who will be supporting me. I'm trying to avoid this. I feel this impending indifference is more or less what I'm trying to focus on, because it's been half and half in terms of how I pitch it to people and them getting it and accepting it. If that makes sense.
Right. Right. Okay. So your major concern is that it's a communist entity that's taking over the water supply and it's going to wreck the environmental standards in the neighborhood, right?
Yes.
Okay. So it's going to destroy people's property values and the water could become dangerous if what you're saying is true. And you're going to have people who don't share your values in control of a precious resource that you put into your children's bellies.
Right.
So, I mean, you were there for COVID, right? What you have to do is, first of all, you have to figure out if people care, right? Do you have kids, right? What do you think of China, right? Do you like communism? Whatever it is, right? Like, do you dislike communism or whatever it is? What do you think of the environment, right? So, you know, the Chinese are terrible with the environment and they're taking over the water supply. That is absolutely going to endanger our community. We need to do something. Here's the specific thing I want you to do. I want you to call City Hall. I want you to sign this petition. I want you to go to this website, have a card. It is absolutely essential we do this. We have to protect our communities. We have to protect the water supply. We have to keep our children safe. You have to hit people. Rather, the vague thing, when you listen back to it, it's like, oh, it'd be kind of nice. And, you know, there may be some concerns. That's too foggy. People need simple, clear, direct messages. They need to be motivated either by fear or greed or love. Now, in this case, you can't really do greed, but you have fear of negative things and love of their children and perhaps hatred of communism or something like that, right? And you'd want to go to the church because the church has traditionally been pretty hostile to communism because, I mean, the communists regularly kill priests whenever they take over. So you need to figure out where you're going to go and you need to be emphatic. Now, I'll tell you this, man. One of the toughest things in life is to be emphatic and direct and passionate without people being able to write you off as crazy.
Right.
Right. And so the only way that you can be emphatic and passionate without being considered crazy. Do you know what the difference is? Like, do you know how to do that?
No, I don't know.
Okay. Crazy people need you to agree with them. And that desperation is what discredits their message. I'm not saying that's you. I'm not calling you crazy or anything like that. I'm just saying that if it's like, I'm doing this for your benefit, I'm willing to take this bullet, all you have to do is X. If you are 150% certain of the righteousness and justice of your cause and that you're there to help people, not, oh, I need you to make up for all of the trauma I suffered over COVID when people didn't listen to me, then it's about you and people will recoil. So people, I mean, you can see this on X occasionally, right? So people will say, oh gosh, what was it about? There was something floating around that, I'm mad at atheists because atheists complied over COVID. Because atheists complied over COVID, I couldn't travel to my father's funeral. And therefore, that's why I'm mad at atheists, right? They try to make it personal, you know, like, well, Steph was raised by a violent, crazy woman, and that's why he's got issues with women or something like that, right? So what they'll try and do is they'll try and make it psychological rather than factual. And so if you have any doubt or you will feel bad if people say no or you have some emotional reason why people need to listen to you, they won't listen to you. I mean, it's one of these sad things. If you show fear, it's like, you know, you ever have this thing where you're a kid and there's this big ass growly dog there. And somebody says to you, and he's towering over you like a Great Dane. And somebody says to you, oh, just don't show any fear. And you're like, bro, I already wet myself. You know, how am I supposed to not? But it's one of these things. If you're afraid of talking to a woman and you show fear, then she's going to say no. But if you don't show fear, she's more likely to say yes. As a whole, this is the funny thing about the Me Too movement is the Me Too movement just stopped sensitive guys from approaching women. The insensitive jerks will continue to do it. They just filtered out all the good guys and put out blanket invitations for the bad guys. So if you are 150% convinced of the righteousness and importance of your cause for other people, you're doing it for them. It's not about your ego. It's not about you being in charge. It is for them. This is what has sustained me for like 40 plus years is, you know, when people say, oh, Steph, you say this negative thing about this group or women or this. It's like, I want them to be happy. I absolutely, completely and totally want people to be happy. Oh, you're really harsh on abusive parents. It's like, well, yeah. Yeah. Because I don't want people to abuse their children because their children will end up unhappy. And that's the world my daughter has to live in, but they'll also end up very unhappy. And so I am I'm blunt and firm with people because I want them to be happy. It's not about me being right. It's not about me winning or dominating. And that's why I think, you know, not to pat myself. I mean, Lord knows I've made tons of mistakes, but not to pat myself on the back too much, right? But just to say, I think that's why, as far as philosophy goes, I'm really compelling, because I'm like here, for instance, I'm not trying to have you think I'm right. I'm not trying to have you think I'm cool. I'm genuinely trying to help you achieve your goal through commitment. The most committed in any conflict will always win, the most consistent and the most committed. And so you have to be like, I don't know if you've heard of this thing. We've got these people coming in from China. They don't care about they don't care about environmental standards. I mean, my God, the Yangtze River is a sewage fest, right? They don't care about this stuff. They're taking over our water supply. It's really dangerous. It's going to harm your property. It's going to harm your kids. It's going to harm the cohesiveness of the community. This is one of these times where you just have to do something. Now, fortunately, you don't have to, you know, sell your house and join the Moonies. All you have to do is, and then just give them something to do. And I'm going to circle back. I'm going to check you did it. Promise me you're going to do it. I'm telling you, this is for your benefit, not mine. And that's the best way to convince people, is to be fully committed to what is the best thing for them. And if you're certain of that, it's almost irresistible. If it's about you, people won't listen. I mean, I know it's not rational, but that's just the way people work, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think it is that, because I had the urge to just to just move. I mean, it's obviously something that's continuously in the back of my head. It's just like, you know, the way I dealt with the COVID situation, I just moved to a place that was better, mm-hmm. you know?
And at some point, that's fine. Like, that's fine too. But what that does is it lowers the stakes. Like, if you have to convince the people because you can't move, then there's a kind of desperation, and it's sad but true. The confident salesman is the one who sells. The one who doesn't need the sale is the one who sells. The one who's desperate for the sale is the one who doesn't sell. So you can move, and you say, listen, I can move. Maybe you can't. I can go somewhere else, but maybe you can't. Maybe your kids are tied into the school. Maybe there's a whole Little League thing here. Maybe your wife is part of a bridge club that she'll never leave behind. Maybe your whole family is here and you can't move. I'm willing to take this on, even though I could move, because I know it's the right thing for the community. I really need your help. And it's for your benefit. I'm promising you that. And just you know in your core that it is for their benefit. And people sense that at a very sort of deep level. And people are always sniffing for people who are basing things on ego or desperation or some prior trauma or something like that. And I'm not saying that's you, of course, in particular, but if people sense that you are really dedicated to what's best for them and you're willing to take the bullets and do most of the work, but they just have to do X, Y, or Z, they're much more likely to listen.
Wow. Thank you so much for that.
You are very welcome. You're very welcome. And drop me a line, of course, host@freedomain.com. Let me know how it's going, and good for you for doing what you're doing. All right. Seth has asked to speak again. Maybe he got his tech issues sorted out. Seth, don't leave me hanging. Don't do it. Don't talk block me, friend. Come on, babe. Come on, man. No, no, no. All right. Richard Wright, you are back, my friend. What is on your mind?
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, sorry about that. It cut out last time.
No sweat.
No sweat.
So my question was, what is your philosophy on when or how you encourage your children to go from following your direction or wisdom to choosing more on their own, maybe in a situation that wouldn't be what you would choose, but it's not necessarily wrong or majorly impactful?
Can you give me a real or a theoretical scenario? I just want to make sure I'm targeting the answer at something that means something to you.
Yeah. I mean, I have a few young kids between 2 and 7. And you can see their independent nature, and they're like, oh, this is a good idea. I want to do this. I think this would be good. I think it would be helpful, or I think it's good for me. But obviously, there's a bigger picture wisdom and experience that you have as a parent that you're like, good thought, but here's some extra information to why we shouldn't probably do that today. And but over time, I don't think you would want to. I'm just thinking about this, about how over time, if you are always guiding them back to your answer, you know, what is the philosophy? How are you building them up to also then be thinking on their own, taking responsibility for their actions, their thoughts, their what they think, you know, actually do some critical thinking and make a decision, maybe even in spite of what makes sense to you
right.
as their parent.
Do you work in a very abstract field as a whole?
Can you define that? Abstract field?
I mean, you're not working directly with like machinery and with your hands and stuff like that, right?
No.
Okay. Because I asked you for a specific example and you didn't give me... You just gave me more theoretical frameworks. I'm like, bro's an accountant or something like that. Because I'm like, you could just say, I say, hey, Richard, could you give me a specific example? Just tell me no. No, I refuse. I'm going to spin more platonic words than you can spit into a spider web. All right. No,
right.
That's fine.
No, I'm sorry. I generally think abstractly, but I didn't think of it that way before.
All right. I'm going to give you the concept of concrete and call it a house. All right.
Right.
Okay. So... in general, you know, there's lots of different ways to do it, and each child is different. What I have found helpful is not to give them answers, but to teach them the questions to ask, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I want to ride my bike without a helmet, right? Now you got to put your helmet on, you know. Now, you take an egg and you smash it against the wall. but you say, okay, so how nice is it to ride without the helmet? You know, like... 1 to 10, 10 being, you know, a candy mosh pit at Disneyland, and 1 being, I don't know, one of Dad's long stories, right? So, and they'd say, oh, it's a 3, right? And I say, okay, well, how bad is it if you fall and, you know, really crack your head? Because, you know, you're learning how to ride the bike and you know, whatever. It's easy, right? You hit one rock, you skid, there's gravel, could be any number of things, right? You'd go up the curb at the wrong angle, psh, down you go, right? So how bad is it to crack your head versus how good is it to feel the wind in your hair, which, you know, if memory serves and it's been a while, was pretty nice, right? So you ask them those questions and just get them to do that cost-benefit analysis. Now, again, that's not perfect, right? Because it's only when they're younger, you just, you know, you put the helmet on. We have to wear a helmet. Why? Because I don't want you to get injured, blah, 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 right? But they have to start balancing risk when they get older and telling kids, you know, what are the pluses and what are the minuses? And I mean, I've had to do these calculations as I'm sort of rounding the home stretch to 60, which is there are things that I would, like my daughter jumps off a big wall, right? And I'm like, that would be fun. Unless it hurts my knee, my ankle, my hip, or my back, in which case I could be laid up for a long time. So I have to do these cost-benefit, and it's a different, when I was younger, I didn't even think twice. I'd do what she did, just jump off the wall, right? And I'm like, it could be fine, but I do this cost-benefit analysis. And these days, I generally don't. I mean, the stuff I will do, I'll go, you know, paddleboarding and I'll go swimming and all of that. And I go rock climbing still from time to time. So, but that's all relatively safe, right? But when it comes to just like the other day, my daughter and I were out and there was at a school, there was a running long jump, right? And my daughter is like a complete toad grasshopper when it comes to the long jump. It's crazy. Like she basically sprouts wings. She's a Pegasus. And she does a great jump. And she's like, Dad, you should do it. And listen, a couple of years ago, I did it. I just sprinted and jumped. But now I'm like, okay, the sprinting I can do, I know I can still sprint. But if I jump and I land and something happens to my knee, because this happened to me years ago, it took like 8 months to get better. And it's just cost benefit. What's the benefit is like, wow, it'd be cool if I did that. That's fun. But the downside is pretty significant, right? So getting kids to do the cost benefit analysis is really important. And rather than saying, well, you probably shouldn't do it because of X, Y, and Z, say, okay, let's talk about it, right? What's the plus? What's the minus? What's the good? What's the bad? And so on. And getting them to do that cost-benefit analysis, because that cost-benefit analysis is going to be really important when they hit that drinking, drugs, and sex peer pressure in their teens, right? Because they're going to have to do, you know, you can say don't do it, and of course that's the, you know, right to avoid it, but they're still going to have to do a cost-benefit analysis. Which is, okay, so if I have a drink, then I'm not going to be looked at as weird by my friends. And you know, that look, you know, ugh, nerd, whatever it is. I mean, that means a lot to teenagers. I'm not so old that I can't remember that kind of stuff, but they have to do a cost benefit as opposed to, you know, someone who's like, hey, take this unmarked pill at a party. And it's like, okay, that's definitely a bad idea. Let's go through, like, you don't know where it comes from and it's bad, it's illegal, and it's going to mess with your head and it could be permanent damage and, you know, all that kind of stuff, right? So I think as a whole, you want to get them pretty early on. I mean, outside of pure moral things, you want to get them to do the cost benefit analysis rather than give them the answers, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And absolutely. And when have you had situations where the cost benefit analysis, there's a large deviation between the two?
Okay. Could you give me a concrete example of what you're talking about? What the hell are you talking about?
You say, hey, you should wear a helmet. We're riding down the street, riding down this bumpy gravel road. And they say, oh, no, it'll be okay. I've fallen before. I didn't get hurt last time, so I probably won't get hurt next time. And you go, yeah.
No, and that's
riding down the gravel road.
That's a fair question, right? That's a fair question, right? And then I would say, how many times have you fallen on the bike? And they'll say 10 or 5 right. or whatever it is, right? And say, so each time, did you think you wouldn't fall the next time? Well, yeah. Did you fall right. again? Well, yeah. So in general, you're still going to keep falling on the bike based upon what happened in the past. So
I never hit my head,
bad
Dad.
Argument. I'm sorry?
But I never hit my head, Dad.
Sure. Well, actually, you did, but you hit it so hard you can't remember, and I just totally gaslight them. No, I'm kidding, right? But yeah, you didn't hit your head, absolutely. But you could have, right?
Right.
And you know, your brain is your most precious organ, and it's in this little thin eggshell of a head, right? And you know, listen, and if they absolutely insist on riding without their helmet, then I just say no. Like you still have to have the authority and you still need to keep them safe.
Right.
Right. So you give them the cost benefit, and if they make a wise decision with the cost benefit, more power to them. If they won't and they absolutely insist on riding without their helmet, I'd say, yeah, now I'm your cost benefit and I have to do it for you. Right. In the same way, like you can't go to work, I have to go to work and make the money. I can't let you ride without it. I have to be your cost benefit analysis because I'm afraid, I'm sorry, like you're just making the wrong decision. And then, of course, if they're smart, they say, well, didn't you ride a bike without a helmet when you were a kid? I'm like, there actually were no helmets when I was a kid. And there were no freaking seatbelts in cars, so even though those are ambiguous as far as the sort of help that they do. But yeah, it wasn't even thought of, but we've had advancements. You used to be able to smoke in the cinema and on the airplane. You can't do that anymore either. So there's some advancements, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. And my wife and I have very much been always trying to make sure we ask them questions about what they're thinking about rather than giving them the answer to the question, period. You know, just like, no, you can't. We try to talk to them about those things. And
yeah, you need to step them through your thinking so that they can replicate how you think.
Right.
And... You know,
one of the things I really hate is when people just say, because I said so.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm like, you just gave them a dead end.
And what are you,
like,
the government?
You didn't give them any answer.
Right. Right. You have to pay more taxes. Why? Because I said so. So, no, I get all of that, but you do need to get them used to the downside of cost benefit. So I wouldn't do it with regards to biking without a helmet, but I would do it with regards to, let's say that they want to go hunting for crayfish in a fast-flowing stream. And you might say, you know, it's pretty rapid, you know, you might, you know, fall. And they're like, no, I got it. I say, okay, well, you know, because the downside of that is what? You fall on your butt and you get wet, right? It's not the end of the world, right? So you do want to give your kids the opportunity to choose wrongly, obviously, right? Because otherwise everything remains, as in your case, largely theoretical, right? So you do want to let your kids be able to choose, not obviously, you know, helmets going down a cliff or something, or jumping off of really, but you know, if they jump and they say, I think I got it and it seems too high, it's like, I don't think you should. I think it's not worth it. Maybe you can go to where it's a little bit less high. But if they want to do it, you know, I mean, there have been countless times when my daughter says, I can do this jump. And I'm like, I feel uneasy about it. And because my wife's not there, she does it. And she's fine. And she's fine. And so, yeah, I mean, if it's not, you know, obviously something that's dire, then let them make the decisions and let them learn how to calculate their own cost benefit. Because, you know, I said this in a show a couple of weeks ago, like people's calculation of cost benefit. When I was talking to the incel community, people's calculations of cost benefits are just crazy these days, to the point where they think they talk to a girl at Starbucks, they go to jail. Like, it's wild.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome, Richard. You're welcome anytime. And I really do appreciate these parenting questions. They are fantastic. All right. We've got just in time. Oh, no, no. I chose the wrong person. Seth is not with us, sadly. Justin. Golden. He's gold, baby. Ari Gold style. What is on your mind? We have a maybe show, not a no show. We have a maybe show. Yes, go ahead.
Was I next? I got.
I think you may be thinking there's a more formal order than there is, but go on.
I just had a.
I can't hear you, man. I can hear myself.
I can hear myself,
but not you.
But not you.
Okay, so what I'm going to recommend, my friend, is you need to get a headset. Because you're calling into an audio show. All right. Jasis? I don't know. Is that Aramaic? I'm not positive. Medium positive. You need to unmute and then talk, I suppose. I guess both, one after the other. Hello, hello. Hello. I think I heard something.
Hello?
Hello, are you calling from 2004?
Sorry, I'm very far out in the country. Let me get away and see if I can find some more service.
I think that's better.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, go ahead.
Excellent. Well, firstly, thank you so much for your time, sir. I am in a bit of a moral dilemma. Well, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I would like to someday run for political office, but I have two things going on here. One thing is, I think a lot of the concepts that I'd like to talk about, maybe the average person doesn't quite have the attention span to hear. And secondly, I fear judgment from my close friends and my family. And I'm wondering what advice you might have to get over those two things.
Okay, so give me a scale of 1 to 10. How far are you away from the general mindset? Like how much are you trying to pull people out of a matrix or a mindset? Like 10 being full on anarcho-capitalism, peaceful parenting, like all of the stuff that makes that has me head spinning around the world, what I do, which is why I'm not running, of course, for political office. I'm relatively sane that way, which is not to say you're not, obviously. But so 1 to 10, 1 being you want to nudge people a little bit more in the direction of freedom, and 10 being full peaceful parenting, NAP, UPP, ANCAP, where are you on that scale in terms of what you want to communicate to people in the realm of politics?
I think I'd call myself a 7, possibly an 8. I just think that things are not quite as they seem. Like, for instance, things like modern monetary theory kind of explains the way the taxes are actually done. Like, I don't think that taxes necessarily go to pay for things. I think that taxes are an inflation device, right? So that, I think that that's a big choice that could radically alter the way that people think about their government. But at the same time, I think that that concept is a little too difficult for most people, but it is a key concept.
Well, also, it wouldn't be something that you could particularly change at a local level, because it's the F is in the Federal Reserve. And I know it's not a federal corporation any more than Federal Express is, but you wouldn't be able to do much about that at the local level, right?
Right, right.
So what is it that you want to change at the level that you could have influence over? Sorry, go ahead.
Um, I guess I don't necessarily have a point that I would go for. I just would be more in favor of telling the truth. Like, you know, you see these documents and you see a lot of like political language, like there's a lot of adjective use in describing things. And I think that most things are just weaponized. You know, I think that just telling the truth about something and coming back down to a base level with some of these concepts would be helpful. And at the same time, I think that it's getting really hard for young people to make a living, like buying a house, getting a job that pays a wage that isn't like the bare minimum. And I think like the financial status of the United States kind of has a lot to do with that.
Oh, I think we lost him. I think the country swallowed up his words. Yeah, I mean, so if you want to run for office locally, you need to figure out the local stuff that you can achieve with the authority that you would have, right? If you want to run for mayor of a small town, then you need to figure out what you can do in that small town that is going to affect some kind of change. If you want to change very much, you know, larger, more abstract and all-encompassing structures, such as monetary policy or foreign aid or things like that, then what you need to do is you need to give speeches rather than run for office, because the only people who can change that kind of stuff tend to be at the very top of the political hierarchy. And unless you're a total rich genius like Trump, it's going to take you just a little while to get there. And of course, Trump's been talking about the policy changes that he wants, in particular with tariffs, since the 80s at least, probably, probably not earlier, but the 80s. So I would say that if you want to get into politics, limit your discussions to what you can affect and change with the political power that you would get a hold of, right? So there may be certain zoning things you could do. There may be certain things that you could do in City Hall that would be a benefit to people that might expand or extend their liberties. Then maybe you can cut spending and lower property taxes or something like that. Then I would stick with talking to people about the issues you can do something about, because otherwise, in a sense, you're just a kind of another big promises windbaggery politician who's talking about monetary policy, which a local politician would have no effect on. If you want to talk about the larger issues, you have to go speaking tours, you have to go books, blogs, videos, and that kind of stuff, and personal conversations as well. So I hope that helps. And I'm sorry, feel free to call back when you have a slightly better internet. All right.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, man. I appreciate that. And best of luck in what it is that you're heading into. freedomain.com/donate. I'm sorry we didn't get to the people who couldn't answer, maybe had some tech issues, but freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. Don't forget free books, freedomain.com/books, free documentaries at freedomain.com/documentaries, and follow me on X at Stefan Molyneux. Love you guys. Well, I guess a lot of you are. Everyone I see here is following me, but if you can spread the word, I really do appreciate it. And thanks again to our Lord Elon Musk for letting dissidents back into the public square, such as he has, and very admirable. And I do appreciate the opportunity and the restoring of my account. YouTube, still waiting for an answer, man. All right. Thanks, everyone. Bye.